Hi, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and we've got a special episode for you today because we have some new chatters with us. So as usual, I have my regular co-host.
Hi, I'm apparently a weird husband. According to chat, I'm also named Tech.
Yep, okay. And with us, as who is often with us, we have...
Hi, I'm Jason.
I'm Jan.
And our very first time guest with...
Oh, me, Raven.
And Raven. And they are all coming to us from their studio in an undisclosed location. And with us, our sometimes QA guy.
Hi, I'm Jax. Stealing text lines.
Excellent.
He's allowed.
And today we're going to talk about mediums that don't get the love they deserve. So, Tech, you want to explain a little bit about that topic?
Sure. There's a lot of so by mediums I mean like artistic mediums and mediums of expression, and in society we have a lot of things that we accept. We accept. Like big studios making big movies, and we accept, songs on the radio and things. But there's a lot of other mediums out there that don't quite get the respect that they deserve. And I'll start us off with a simple one, animation. Animation doesn't seem to get the respect that it deserves, where a lot of animated movies are instantly... sort of put into a secondary category as it's for kids and it's not for serious things. And no matter how good or how serious or how important a movie is, if it's either cel-drawn or computer-generated animation, it has to be in this like secondary category where it can't be taken seriously. And I don't know how many times I've heard people say, X movie is really, really good. What, is it a cartoon? Yeah, that's for kids. I'm not watching it. Or a really, really good animated TV show, and it's like, yeah, but it's a cartoon. I let my six-year-old watch that. It's like, you let your six-year-old watch Archer? I don't think you want to do that. Yeah, but it's a cartoon. Those are for kids. No, they're not.
Exactly.
And I mean, studios like Pixar have gone a long, long way to show that they can do very serious, albeit aimed at a kid's audience, they can put in really serious, very emotional, very adult and important messages into animated movies. Like, that Sarah McLachlan song in the second Toy Story, or pretty much all of WALL-E.
Don't they use the same song for those commercials late at night when they're telling you to send money to help out the SPCA for dogs?
Yes. It's definitely the guilt charity song.
Just because it's emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for the longest time, they've, cartoons are always relegated to a, this sort of secondary category, and it really annoys me. There's a lot of really good, really serious, anime and some very serious animated movies out there that are very, very good. Some great short stories. I mean, I think, Jason, I made you watch a Polish short movie called Paths of Hate. The one about the two pilots.
Oh, that one's amazing.
That's so good. So powerful. Not for kids.
Not for kids.
You're talking about the World War II one, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dogfight one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic.
Animation, there has been some amazing animation that have been aimed at adults, and it's really difficult because we don't want to call them adult cartoons because sometimes that means something else,
entirely different.
It does, and we don't mean for mature viewers. Again, that often means something else. We really mean, there's been some amazing stuff, and for instance, like Metalocalypse. There's a lot of humor there. There's an amazing music coming from there. Great comedy. And the animations are pretty wild. I mean, you can definitely tell that they were influenced by heavy metal.
But I mean, even going so far as to videotape a guitar player's fingers and then reanimating it perfectly so you can... The fingering of the guitar is accurate to what a real player would do. So, Brandon Small's a genius. I mean, that show is so good.
Absolutely. And
I want season 5, Brandon.
Yes,
give me season
please.
5, please.
There's been so many of these other things. And I think one of the things, it's like one of the first ones I'm going to bring up is The Simpsons. And The Simpsons was put on primetime. It wasn't meant for kids, but because people saw cartoon, they thought kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember when it first came out and people were really upset about,
I mean, all the way up to the president.
Yeah. About like the language that was used and the topics that were covered and this whole idea. And it was like, no, this is not for kids. And yet it has become something that even the writers have had to acknowledge that kids are watching. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
No?
Oh, absolutely.
Are we talking to ourselves here?
Chirp, chirp.
Chirp, chirp. Yeah. And I think also in, you know, animation, when we're talking about animation, and we're going to bring Jason in on this for sure, is the idea of anime. People see anime and they think that's for kids, that's for teens, and they don't even realize, like, Jason, would you say that more anime is geared at adults than kids, or am I wrong on these numbers?
So when anime first became really big, there was a company known as Manga Entertainment, or as we all remember those advertisements of manga, and there was an explosion and a robot and there was a samurai, and you know, they geared it towards adults. But in America, no matter how much you try to market a cartoon, people think it's for children, no matter what it can be, which is why back in the 90s you found Orotsuka Doji, Legend of the Overfiend, just out there for children to see. For those who don't know, that's a hentai. Don't Google it, kids.
Don't Google. Don't Google. Google is not your friend today.
No, it is not. You also find things like La Blue Girl, but then you also had things like Ninja Scroll. Ninja Scroll has mature content in it, but it is not necessarily a adult entertainment type thing. It's just,
it's not sexual. It's violent.
Oh no, yeah. there is sex in it.
Oh, okay.
But it's like a sex scene as part of a movie. It's not a porno.
Right. Gotcha.
Exactly. It's a rated R movie, not an X rated.
Gotcha.
And so I think what the problem was, and there still is, that people don't know how to market anime to people, right? Like, we know the Ghibli stuff is for kids. That's obvious because Disney put their name on it.
Is all of it, though?
Grave of the Fireflies is first off, he made that at another. He didn't actually make that under the Ghibli name originally. It got brought into the fold. But most of the Ghibli stuff is for children, and it's you could show it in schools. I mean, that's where I first saw Kiki's Delivery Service when I was in the third grade. It was actually raw, recorded off Japanese television, and my teacher used that to teach Japanese. She was a Japanese American lady, and she what she would basically do is, as the movie was going, she would recite lines, and we would, you know, dissect it and translate it as we listened. It was really awesome. It's also probably why I'm an otaku now. But anyway, honestly, you are correct, though. Most of the majority of anime is adult themed, and it's not necessarily by overt content. A lot of it is by the subtle content. A lot of the fan service is what we dub it, makes it not suitable for children because there's a lot of boobs, a lot of cleavage, a lot of scantily clad ladies and boys.
High School of the Dead.
even safe ones like Food Wars.
Physics, AKA they defy the laws of physics using matrix gravity. But anyway, those type of things make anime, a lot of anime, unsuitable for younger audiences because they are very overtly sexual. But yet, you know, that brings up a whole different topic where you can say, well, is Supernatural okay for certain ages? Because they're two underwear models and, you know, they get shirtless and tortured and all kinds of things. Or is Twilight suitable for teens because Jacob doesn't know how to put a shirt on?
He knows how. It's just that his transformation makes it rip off all sexily all the time.
First off, I will just let you know that Taylor Lautner in the first movie literally shows up in his first scene with no shirt on.
That's not true. That is not true because he shows up to fix her car or something.
Oh yeah, that is true. I'm sorry. The first time you see him outside of this of his subservience to Bella, he has no shirt.
Yeah, he's already starting to transform as a wolf. That's Shark the indication boy. That he's yeah a wolf.
That is Shark Boy.
Yes, it is Shark Boy. And yes, oh you should God. Feel creepy thinking he's hot, but yeah.
First off, I saw that movie in theaters, so it's okay.
Which one, Twilight or Shark Boy and Lava Girl?
Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
You've seen Twilight too. Don't let him lie to you.
I only saw the first one in the theaters, and it was your fault.
Don't let him lie to you.
It was your fault.
Why was it my fault?
Because you allowed it to happen.
I have only seen the Twilight movies. I've not seen Shark Boy. Does that get me any points? No. Negative points.
No, I think you lose points. I think you lose points.
I don't care.
But, you know, if you think about it, it does bring into the question, like, why is sexuality in a cartoon inappropriate? But they can have, you know, sexy man pecs running around all these teen romances like nobody cares. Like nobody
cares. I think it's the idea that it's either a cartoon is for kids or it's explicit, and that there's no in between in.
There's no middle ground.
Like the mainstream idea. Meanwhile, like Initial D, there's no violence. There's no nudity.
There's no fan service.
There's no fan service.
Unless,
there's none of this
unless,
stuff.
Unless you're
a car guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's 100% fan service.
But I wouldn't say that that's for kids. I'd say that's for teens, like preteen to adults.
Absolutely. I think the material also helps define who it's actually aimed for. Angie and I are actually talking about it today. She wanted to know if there was a manga that she could introduce her nephew to, Asher. And I was sitting there thinking, I had to think about it. I literally was like, One Punch Man? No.
No, he's too young for that.
By the way, season 2 was announced.
Yes.
Yes. I was like, My Hero Academia? No.
Dragon Ball?
And then I realized that there was an anime known as Cheese Sweet Home. And Cheese Sweet Home is literally the daily story of a kitten told in little 2 to 5 minute chunks in the anime and short little chapters in the manga. And it's literally about an adorable kitten going through an ordinary, everyday kitten's life. Like, literally, there's a small little thing about him learning to use the litter box.
I wrote that down because I need to look this up.
It's gonna have
absolutely
to find that
adorable.
And you know, recognizing your audience and recognizing who's actually paying attention to your products can reap dividends for any sort of medium and content producer. I mean, let's look at Sanrio, the makers of Hello Kitty. Hello Kitty is obviously aimed at young little girls and people who collect everything Hello Kitty. It is the show will give you cavities. You know, anything that comes out with Hello Kitty on it is so sickly, cloyingly sweet and adorable.
I have a Hello Kitty scrub top.
Yeah.
I love that.
So what do they come out with? They come out with a Gretsuko.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Which is a yep.
So
Nutty even has her a Gretsuko mask. But it's about an adorable little red panda suffering in a
blue collar cubicle job.
In a tedious job.
Not even cubicle, open office style.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. She's stuck in office hell with a boss that a hateful boss and coworkers that don't care and friends that don't seem to be
literally a pig.
Yeah, literally a pig.
A chauvinistic pig.
And her only outlet for her rage is karaoke death metal. Done by an adorable tiny little cartoon red panda, and it is so not aimed at kids. It's aimed at all of us who on some days don't like our jobs, which
is
all of us.
You know who it's aimed at? It's aimed at those little goth and emo kids that grew up with the Hello Kitty backpacks, and then now we're in the work hell and the what am I even doing with my life situation. And so, yeah, they know their audience. They know that they had us with, you know, Hello Kitty and Karopi and all of the friends. And then they said, guess what? We've got one for you as an adult, too. And I love it.
You know, it's...
And again, there's no violence. There's swearing in Japanese character kanji on the screen, but yeah, there's no swearing. There's no sex.
It's fine.
But I wouldn't show it to kids.
I think my favorite character in Aggretsuko is when she goes to the yoga studio and there's like the
protein.
The only word he says, protein.
Protein.
I know those guys. They're at my gym.
Yes, but then when she figures out like this nirvana realization and she talks to him about it and he goes, ah, protein.
It's funny you bring up Aggretsuko because there is all there's one of the things that the Japanese do so well with anime is they can actually get a they can make subgenres so specific to who they're looking for. One of those in particular is what I've dubbed dad fiction, and the equivalent to this would be, you know, Taken.
Okay. Uh oh. Did we lose Jason?
No, he's back.
Okay, so Taken and
John Wick.
Okay.
In anime form, there's a certain fellow by the name of Golgo 13.
Yeah, Golgo. That's old school.
Yeah, Golgo 13. He's imagine combining the characters of John Wick and the characters from Taken with James Bond, but absurd and stupid. Like, I only use a modified M16, and I can do things like shoot a bullet through an air duct and ricochet it off the corners to assassinate a guy on the third floor.
Nice.
Who he literally does that to in an episode. And it's literally geared up for just to make like guys in their 40s and 50s super pumped to watch a cartoon.
So I'm going to add another piece to animation about where it doesn't get the recognition it deserves, because even Disney and Ghibli does not get the recognition it deserves when it comes to awards. That animation seems to have its own category, and very rarely has there ever been animated movies that are nominated outside of an animated category. Some of those outliers, I think Beauty and the Beast is the first that was nominated for Best Picture. And it got like for, what was it? Whatever digital graphics, like special effects and so forth.
What's really funny, though, is that Life of Pi will win Best Picture.
Yeah.
And it's 98% animated.
Exactly. Yeah. Or Avatar will get, you know, well, probably not because it's sci-fi. But you know what I mean? Like, there are movies out there that have essentially computer animation that get these nominations, but that traditional animated or even done by computer but shown cartoony or not lifelike don't get the same recognition.
Like The Life of Pi wins Best Picture. Great. You know what? It was nominated.
Yeah.
It deserved it. And that was my favorite Ang Lee movie.
Yeah.
It was absolutely fantastic. Really good. I love the book. It was a worthwhile adaptation of that amazing book.
Seeing it on the big screen was just fantastic.
But WALL-E doesn't deserve Best Picture?
There's tons of... Yeah, Up.
Up? Oh, my God.
Now, I don't know. And people are going to write in and say, oh, but these were nominated. Yes, we know some of them were. I don't know all of them because I don't pay attention to award shows for this very reason. Because anything that is sci-fi is deemed unworthy. It's deemed unworthy. The fact that Buffy never got an Emmy nomination for anything, the fact that, you know, Hush and The Body didn't get Emmy nominations.
What's
You've
more with
got
feeling
to be kidding
didn't,
me.
Didn't deserve an award?
No, none of that. Meanwhile, like, everybody and their mother are trying to make their own once more with feeling. And I'm sorry, Riverdale. No, you didn't do it. I don't care how good their voices are. You didn't do it. The Flash, you were lucky. You have a lot of Broadway people. But anyway, but the fact that animation, sci-fi, those things are considered unworthy make me not interested in a lot of these awards shows, and it gets me really upset. But like, look at the Ghibli stuff. I mean, the fact that, why was Princess Mononoke not nominated for a million technical awards?
Because it was bad?
Technical awards.
Right. Because
it wasn't bad. It was
because
just boring.
The heaps of dead animators, they were mired in lawsuits from the families of all the animators they killed doing that wavy grass scene.
Quit trolling 14-year-olds with your hatred of Mononoke.
Look, the trolls invaded our chat. I got to mess with the trolls.
Right. So with that, I have to, we're going to switch gears slightly.
Yep.
I'm going to talk about another thing that doesn't get the respect it deserves.
I feel like I got to put in Rodney Dangerfield. I don't get no respect.
They get no respect. They get, okay, anyway. So, I want to talk about video games, specifically a subset of video games, where, you know, AAA titles and companies are going to go out there and spend hundreds of millions of dollars making these big games, and these are the games we're supposed to want to play. And if we play them and if we give them the money, then all is good. But if we prefer to play another type of video game, let's say puzzle games. Or
Puzzle Quest for the win.
Or if we prefer to play games in another medium, I don't want to play on a console. I prefer to play games on my phone because I can carry this with me everywhere I go. Phone games are just put down in this other category. Now, this thing...
Farmville, please.
This thing has more processing power than a PS2. You could put pretty much... I mean, I can Bluetooth a PlayStation controller to my phone. I can remote my PlayStation to my phone and play my PlayStation games on my phone with a controller in any other room in the house. I don't even have to be at my TV with my actual PlayStation. You can do an incredible amount of things, but even publishers themselves don't give these things the credit that they deserve. These are wonderful, powerful computing devices, but even a AAA publisher will come out with Amazing Game 7. We all want to play Amazing Game 7. It's out June 1st. Coming out May 15th, Amazing Game 7, the cell phone game. Which is crap. Because they gave it to some other publisher to make, and they said, just go and make a tie-in, and somebody's going to spend money on it. And, yeah.
And I will say that there are those outliers.
Sure.
Where it was done right. Like, for instance, I would say, oh, man, people are really mad that we don't have the latest Fallout yet. Hey, let's come up with a vault game. That'll be good. That'll tide people over. And it's actually a pretty cool game.
Yeah, and it got completely ripped off lately.
Oh, yeah?
By some zombie survival game that pretty much ripped the code wholesale.
Nice.
And,
DayZ?
Hmm?
Were you talking about DayZ?
I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of the zombie survival games that had, you had to build like a vault to keep your zombie survivors in, and it was 100% ripped code from the Fallout vault game.
Lovely. Yeah, basically, you know, like what Candy Crush did to Bejeweled.
Yeah.
Which, getting back to phone games, there is nothing wrong with enjoying a game like Bejeweled, and that doesn't make you any less of a gamer.
But it's not just the publishers. The other big problem I have here is that we as gamers as a community, look down.
Yeah.
I mean, and there will always be a war between PC gamers and console gamers, and, you know, I'm a console peasant, and call me what you want. And, you know, there will always be this war between the two, but both sides equally turn their nose up at anybody who, you know, well, my chose mediums, I like phone games. I carry them with me. You know, I play puzzle games. There's a lot more games and a lot more things to do than just, you know, well, let's be honest. Let's talk about what we all use cell phone games for. It's something to distract us while we're pooping. Okay? Yep. They are pooping games. They all have that intrinsic purpose. Yes, they do. But there's more to them than that, I think.
Yeah,
and
I don't think
they get the respect they deserve.
Even before phones, there was that argument. It's like, well, what makes a person a gamer? And it's like, oh, I'm a gamer. I game on this console. Oh, no, I'm a gamer.
Look, okay.
Because, hang on. I'm a gamer. Because I carry my dice.
No, you're just a nerd. At that.
Get her! She's a nerd!
But I want to go on record as saying it doesn't matter how you game. As long as you game, you're a gamer. Go ahead, Jason.
No, I'm just saying, you know, some games on your phone I don't think are suitable for the toilet. Because I don't think you can focus, Commander. I don't think you can focus, Commander, when you're on the toilet. But absolutely right. Because I think what hurts the genre of phone game is the fact that because they are phone games and most of them you don't have to pay for, they fall into that category of free-to-play game. And a lot of free-to-play games don't know how to balance their money getting with gameplay.
Right.
Most games,
the freemium content, they have a problem. I'm sorry, Jason.
Go ahead, Jax.
So yeah, I know as Jason's saying that there's we call them now, I think the term is now freemium.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I can legitimately say this, that there are very few games that have found that decent balance of we want our whales because that's how we make our money. For those that don't play mobile game whales, there's a category of how much you pay. There are the freebies, and then there are what's known as whales. They're the ones that will literally pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month to play these games.
Yeah.
I've played games that are great at doing it, Star Wars Guild of Heroes, but I've been playing that game for 2 years now, and I've played games that are terrible at it. Looking at you, Clash of Clans.
Oh, well, that's how they can afford all those actors for their ads.
Right, no, yes. But they have a hard time keeping that balance of, all right, microtransactions is the thing. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons that mobile games don't get a whole lot of respect, because nobody, and I mean nobody, likes microtransactions, period. As soon as they even come into console games, it's a giant uproar.
I'm looking at you, EA, Ubisoft. Battlegrounds 2.
I'm looking at you, Ubisoft. And
anything EA that is a freemium or microtransaction or anything is garbage. They will rip you off.
It's
yeah, and that's
not necessarily. They're not necessarily going to rip you off. It's the content and what they provide for free. If they're going to make a freemium game, what they provide for free and what they provide for pay has to be scaled and balanced. Whereas I, the free player, don't want to feel ripped off if
yeah.
I don't want to give you money. But if you're going to give me extra really cool cosmetics, or you're going to give me extra bonuses to things, that's great. But what I don't want to feel as a free player is gated. I want to feel like I'm going to get more for my money, not less, if I don't pay.
Yep.
And a lot of the games that fail, or that fail to keep interest, are the ones where the real game is the one that you pay for, and you're pretty much playing like a shareware, you know, trial version if you don't.
Yeah.
And it's finding that balance that is super, super tricky. I agree. What they need is to find a better way to get us to pay for these games and make it scaled and, balanced. I'll tell you one thing I don't like. Like, I like Final Fantasy games. I like old school Nintendo games. I would love to play Final Fantasy 4 or 2 on my phone. I can go to the App Store and download it for $24.99.
Ouch. Yeah. So that brings me to a question.
Nope.
Outside of free games, what is the most any of us have paid for a phone game?
I think I paid $8 for the X-Plane app.
Yep.
I honestly have not actually paid a dime for a phone game. But
you've done like add-ons and microtransactions.
See, I was going to ask, are we including the?
I'm asking about paid games, not freemium.
I've not paid, but again, I have bought gems and.
All right, we'll get into that next. Jax, have you paid for any phone game?
Oh, is that Raven?
I paid for Minecraft.
And how much was that?
It was like $6.99,
$7.99. All right, cool. Yeah.
Really, Minecraft?
Sure was. Absolutely worth it.
And you're just whole hogging it.
Yeah, I love it.
Minecraft is awesome. Shush. Don't yuck Minecraft other people's yums.
Interesting thing.
Now,
no, I can't say that I've paid right out for any mobile game ever. I've gone, we'll get into it, but you know, I've bought every now and then, I bought either gems or coins. Or if we really want to argue that Zombies Run is a mobile game, I've paid for the season pass and become a pro member for that, but I've not paid for it outright. I started free on that thing.
I have paid, I think it was $10 or $12, because it was on sale, for the Elder Signs game. And I felt that that was worth it. I didn't play it nearly as much as I thought I would, but I do have a portable two-player version of the game on my iPad.
Oh, I think the Small World app.
Yeah, World.
I think we paid $10 for that.
I think that was like a $6 game, but yep. We bought add-ons as well.
Right, because that was worth expansions. It. That was fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And yeah. I still have that on my iPad. Oddly enough, that's for when the power goes out and we can't see.
So, you know, it's funny, right? Like, phone games... are very stigmatized when it comes to their microtransactions and how to make money. And I think what a lot of people don't realize or see with good ones is how much content you are getting for free. And, you know, they have a lot of content that is not trapped behind a paywall. In fact, the entirety of the game can literally be played for free. It just takes you more time.
Yeah. And that's what Tech was saying.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the best ways they have in that game to generate money is the same thing that Overwatch does, is the same thing that Apex Legends does. They just sell you pretty things. Like Overwatch sells you new skins for your characters. So if you want to see Tracer as a Halloween witch character, or if you want to see Moira as a demoness or succubus or whatever the heck it is, you can buy that skin and it's awesome. Or you can
see a banshee.
Yeah, banshee. There you go. Or if you can see your best gay dad, I'm wearing my Soldier 76
Grill Master 76.
You know, you can get your best gay dad dressed up as Jason Voorhees, and people pay money for that. It has no effect on the gameplay. Yeah. It has no effect on if you're good at the game.
I love vanity objects.
It
makes your character pretty. And Fortnite has made a fortune.
Yeah, oh,
and before Fortnite was Counter-Strike.
Yeah,
and Counter-Strike was making a ridiculous amount of money on weapon skins.
Yeah. So before we move on to our next medium, what is the most that you can guess that you've spent on add-ons, jewels, gems, all of these microtransactions?
Oh,
not total, but like the most.
There was a game on PS3.
Yeah.
That was a freemium game. It was one of the. It was a
flight game.
Yeah, Ace Combat Infinity.
Yeah,
and man, when Crimson Squadron came out, I had to win it. I had to get the Crimson skin for my Sukhoi 33, and I spent a couple $100 on that game easily. I played it for almost a year religiously, so it was, you know, I going out and spending money on 3 AAA titles or playing the same game for an entire year is how I rationalized it for myself. 3 years.
No. I'm thinking it was like $300.
Yeah. I spent money on that game, but it was fun to me. I liked it, and I got to collect like really cool planes and be a nerd and shoot missiles at things. So it made me happy.
Jax?
I have a very hard line typically of I refuse to pay for a game that's already free to begin with. However, the most I can say I've probably spent is probably maybe $5 tops, and that was just to add more coins because I knew for a fact I could beat the level and I just needed an extra life or two.
They gotcha. They gotcha.
I think that I had leftover money from a gift card in the Play Store, but beyond that.
That is willpower. That is willpower right there. And the Nerdy to Me Studios?
Raven, Jen, do you guys want to go first? Or?
Go ahead.
Oh, boy.
I'm fine with this. Like, if I pay for a game, it's to buy the game. I'm not spending any more money. And if the game was free, I'm not paying to keep playing. So I guess my Minecraft money is the most.
All right. So, I feel you, Raven. By the way, there is something to be said to paying for your games up front.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's enough. And that's my whole commitment.
So, if I think about it, there's only 2 games that I have that have microtransactions in them.
No, so how much have you spent, Jay?
Being said...
And ask them how much the game was initially.
No. We're just talking about the added-on. We're not talking about plus the game.
Just tell us your biggest expenditure.
I want to say my biggest expenditure, because I was going to go with the collective, but since you said just biggest expenditure, I can get away with that. It's cool. It doesn't sound too bad.
I don't want anyone doing any soul searching about this. This is why it's biggest expenditure.
I've already been soul searching. It's fine. Because I'm pretty sure I've definitely spent close to like $200, $250.
That's why I won't add these up.
I add them up in my head, but if I got a couple dollars left over from my lunch or whatever, I can buy a couple
boxes here. What I do is I tell myself every time I think about buying a box, I make a tick mark and I don't buy it. Once I hit a certain number, then I can choose, all right, I've done this 20 times or 30 times and I haven't done anything. That's a lot of willpower. Time to feed the beast. And I bought something. The biggest was I spent 50 to get one of the, like the 100 boxes or something like that. It was awesome. I got
them. How many times you've done that?
I've only done it once.
That actually is a good jumping point to my medium that I want to talk about. And that is teen shows. That's right. Teen shows, shows that are geared at teens or that teens are the protagonist. You know, your Riverdales, you know, your Twilight movies, all of these.
So I can beat on Twilight some more, is what you're saying?
Well, here's the thing.
The CW.
Yeah, your CW shows. You know, everything that is about teens and teenagers. Dawson's Creek and Popular and Buffy and all of these things. Vampire Diaries, whatever. And I'm listing a bunch of things. They're not all my favorites. But I will say that I love the genre. And it's completely unrealistic. They never live a real teen's life. If you're watching Riverdale, I mean, it's so over the top. It is impossible that any teen can live a life like this, which is why when we get to the Riverdale episode, I will be recording a Riverdale episode eventually. My current theory, and I'm going to say this before it comes out on the show, my current theory is that what we're watching is Jughead writing. It's fiction. And it's what Jughead is writing. But all of these things, I think, have value. They wouldn't be so prevalent without that value. And we call them guilty pleasures, but we shouldn't feel guilty because they're fun and they give us something. I mean, how often are these teen shows pushing the boundaries that other shows aren't able to do? You know, you have your first lesbian relationship of a main character that spans multiple seasons.
You're on Buffy, huh?
From Buffy on a teen show. You've got, I mean, if you look at Degrassi, I mean, you've got all sorts of topics that were never even mentioned anywhere else. They're always tackling all of these different things. And yes, we can say that they're a little too white. I agree. They're very white, but they're starting to get a little more diverse, I think. But there is something really special to me about teen shows. And I enjoy them. And if you want a podcast that goes through teen shows, We Don't Want to Wait is a fantastic one. They start with Dawson's Creek. I'll let it sink in. You get the joke. Okay. And then they went and they've been going from different teen show to different teen show. Currently, they're covering Veronica Mars. It's amazing. Anyone have anything to say about that? Or does everyone think my medium sucks?
I can't necessarily say that your medium doesn't count. I just have nothing to speak on the matter because I don't watch it.
So why don't you watch it? Let's talk about that.
Well, for one, I refuse to pay for cable TV here in the States. There's that.
Netflix.
Meh. Eh. That's what I got a backlog in Netflix. Well, that's another episode entirely.
Jen, you were going to say something?
I was saying a lot of the like teen shows, as you call them, are guilty pleasures. It's like, oh my God, she's so stupid, but what's going to happen next? I totally watched all of the Sabrina the Teenage Witch that they redid.
I loved it.
I did too.
And Ambrose.
I didn't like it just because it was so much darker than the first one. Well, I watched all the first one too.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just a little guilty pleasure. It's Teen Wolf, guilty pleasure.
I tried to make it through an episode of Riverdale. Does it really, really, it really looks like a Spanish telenovela done in English?
Yep. That's why I love it.
It is. And I grew up watching soap operas with my mom. Like I mean, this is worse than those ever were.
No, this is fantastic. Plus, all of the actors are much hotter than the ones on daytime TV.
Look, first,
although some of them are from daytime TV.
First
off, Victor Newman is super sexy. I don't want to hear it. Okay.
Wait, which one's Victor Newman?
Young and the Restless, baby.
Oh.
See, he gets it.
That Victor. Yes, he's got that whole Silver Fox thing going. But I agree with Jen. Jen was saying that Archie's not supposed to look like that. I do agree. Archie is my least favorite part of Riverdale, which is why I'm so happy that they called it Riverdale and not Archie. because all the other characters are so much better.
R.I.P. Lou.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be interesting how they address that. Like, are they just going to kill him off after they almost killed him off already? I don't know.
Raven, you got anything on this before I start screaming?
No.
What?
No, a word.
I will tell you that when I was younger, I had a lot of different awakenings to teen shows. And I'm not just talking about, you know, ooh, she's hot. Ooh, he's hot. But like,
people were figuring it out to Sailor Moon.
There were, yeah, there were things that they would address that I wasn't encountering in my everyday life. And it really made me think. And I think that for those reasons, there's a lot of quality that comes from these shows. It makes it accessible to approach these topics that we wouldn't normally see.
Hi, Shane.
Hi, Shane. Shane has joined the chat.
So, Jin has dimed me out. I have a guilty pleasure. That guilty pleasure is MTV's, and it makes me shudder saying that.
Oh, Teen Wolf? I've heard a lot of things. It's not on Netflix, so... Yeah.
It's not on Netflix, but it is on Amazon Prime here in the States. And one of the things I will just come out outright and say from Jump Street is the main character is a person of color.
There you go.
And he is part, he's white and Mexican. So right off the bat, I'm cool with it. I'm also cool with the fact that none of the male characters really wear shirts.
After all your blame to poor Taylor Lautner.
You know what I'm saying? Look, it's fine. Like, if you got the muscles for it, you don't need to wear a shirt. I'm just saying. Now, I will say there's no equality because the female werewolves, they all wear shirts. I'm just saying. But I digress. This show, the funny thing about this show, what makes me like the show, but also shows that the show is not getting as much credit as it deserves, is that it took a premise from a Michael J. Fox comedy, supernatural comedy,
which I would definitely say is a guilty pleasure. Emphasis on the guilt there.
Absolutely,
yeah.
a guilty pleasure. Because
do they surf on top of vans in the TV show?
No, they actually. That's the best part is they make that logical. They make the whole werewolf thing logical because instead of him playing basketball and suddenly a white guy suddenly has the handles of Michael Jordan and can dunk like Shaq, they make it lacrosse. So it's a sport where you have to be physical. You know, you don't necessarily tackle, but you can check people like hockey. Mm-hmm. You also have to have keen reflexes and sight and so forth to make goals. Mm-hmm. And it's very logical, the sport that they choose. And it also gives, you know, makes it so that when he wolfs out, he has a mask on, a guard. So he doesn't, you know, he's not.
So it's not obvious.
Exactly.
Okay.
Whereas we all freaking know Michael J. Fox is a werewolf and no one cares.
So I have a question, a little trivia thing. What country is lacrosse the national pastime of?
National sport.
Sorry, national sport.
Sweden.
No.
Until very recently, it was Canada.
It's not Canada anymore?
Well, now our national sport is now hockey.
Oh.
But for the longest time, what? Lacrosse was our national sport.
Yeah.
Wait, time out. It's good. Everybody here in the States attributes hockey to Canada.
Like, yep. Well, it was also, they were both invented in Canada.
Canada.
So is basketball.
So was basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And lacrosse, you can find a lacrosse game being played 364 days of the year in Canada.
What's the one day it's not?
Christmas.
You trying to say Santa Claus don't like lacrosse?
He's busy.
I think he could get some gnarly games going.
No, it's because he plays center. He plays center on the North Pole team, and if he can't play, nobody plays. So they got to wait for him to be done, and then
exactly.
Boxing Day he goes back to work.
Exactly.
But no, the thing, like, and you know, that's the thing. And one of the cool things about Teen Wolf is it's crazy to say this, but there are moments in that show where I find myself going, "Yeah, that was definitely little Jason." Like when he like when he can't talk to the girl or like he has that awkward moment because he says a joke and it just bombs so hard.
So I got a teen show for you that I don't think it's a teen show anymore, but one of them was at least a teen when they started. That I know you watched, Jason, and that was be Supernatural.
Okay, so
got him.
Supernatural. Got him. I don't consider when Supernatural was specifically for teens, like season 1 through 4. That was a guilty pleasure.
Now, that was good pleasure.
Now, it's just a whole lot of sex jokes, a whole lot of saucy dudes, vaguely homoerotic. No, you know, it's not.
It's not vague at all.
I find that every season, their voice gets lower and gravelier, and I don't know how much further down they can go.
Dean, Sam.
Actually, I mean, they crossed like the WWE.
Barry White and Isaac Hayes would be doing their voices in the last season.
Right. But they crossed like the WWE threshold about like season 6 or 7. And now there'll be an episode on and I'll just kind of watch. And the demons have to be stopped at SummerSlam. And let me tell you something, brother. I'm going to go get an angel with tables and ladders and chairs, brother.
And that's the angel talking.
Right, and I have no idea what's going on.
Sam?
Yes, Sammy? Dean?
So I've got questions. So a couple of other teen shows that some people might not realize are teen shows. The Flash?
Oh, come on. How do you not know that's not a teen show? Look, first off, if your show is on the CW, it's a teen show, okay? I don't care if the name of the show is "Hi, I Got Caught with My Pants Down Doing Some Explicit Activity." It's still a teen show, and that explicit activity is going to turn out to be, I don't know, cheating on a test in high school.
Smallville.
I have to go back to Flash for a second.
Yes.
Because Flash being on CW, it's really like they're. The show writers are watching episodes of Riverdale going, well, they're trying to outdo us. They did this. Well, we can do this because you know what? This guy's going to cheat on that girl, but it's not really him because he's from an alternate dimension. But time twist, she's also from another alternate dimension, and they're both actually gorillas.
Well, when your main actor comes from Glee.
Crossover with Heroes of Tomorrow, Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's make it a musical.
Whoa.
Again, whoa, when whoa. Your main actor comes from Glee.
Yeah.
And you've got two first Broadway off, stars on your cast.
First off, real quick plug is because.
Sorry, I mean two Tony Award winners. There were four Broadway stars.
The upcoming, because I'll be on the final two episodes of this season of the Idjit Cast,
which is an intro cast for Supernatural, which you can find at quadruplez.com.
And we'll be going into season 10 after those. Season 10 has the lauded musical episode of
That's
Supernatural.
Awesome. And that is brings it back into the teen show genre because it's in a high school.
It's so good. By the way, the fact that there's two women playing Sam and Dean.
The Idjits listen to this show.
Well, yeah, but
the Idjits listen to this show. No, the Idjits listen to this show.
That's on Netflix.
And on that note,
Shane loves The Flash.
Look, it's in the screen cap on the episode. It's fine.
It's not fine.
I haven't eaten chicken.
By the way, Shane says he loves The Flash. I do too. And again, it's fun. It's great.
I've not watched it.
So are there?
I think Flash is better than Arrow, personally.
I agree. I agree 100%. I think Arrow, they're way too dark and not enough fun, and I couldn't get through the first season. Gets better. I don't care.
They turned the guy who was jumping around in green spandex into, like, Batman.
Well,
and I
okay,
only
but
need
but
Batman in my Batman.
In truth,
more gritty. Everything green.
The Green Arrow is a Batman that kills people, but he does it with, like, finesse. He's supposed to have a charisma of 20 and the Arrow has a charisma of like 10. I just don't care. So I have one other medium, but before we get into that, is there any other mediums that people want to talk about that they don't think get enough love?
Yes. Small time podcasts.
I agree with you on that 100% because whenever you ask somebody what podcast are they listening to, they start talking about these corporate podcasts or these podcasts with famous people on them.
Right. And I mean, shameless plug and all, but
this podcast,
right? This podcast and many others like it.
Like, there is like the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast.
But it, I'm going to go beyond that. I'm going to go with indie art on a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when we worked at a community radio station, there was one of the hosts who would play nothing but top 40 music. And that wasn't in the mandate of our station. And we had to play Canadian music and we had to play local music. And we asked the guy very nicely many times, can you play? There's a whole box of CDs over there. Play some of the local bands. And he goes, yeah, but they're not good. I mean, why would I play them when I could play AC/DC? And have you even listened to them? I don't have to listen to them. They're bad. They're local. I mean, they don't sell out arenas. Well,
there's
no, they
a
don't.
Lot of great artists out there that don't sell out arenas.
But there are a lot.
There's a lot of bad artists that sell out arenas.
So I will challenge everyone to go to a local music show, go to a local music festival, see the art that's in your area, go to an art show, see what's going on out there, listen to a small time podcast, and listen and watch and observe the art that's going on around you, because you will be surprised at the quality of the stuff that's going on in your very own neighborhood.
Check out your local bar scene and see the bands that are going to play there live and check them out. And even if they only ever play once, you might end up with a great show. You might end up with a bad one, but you still had a fun night out. But in that play box at that time, there were two bands I know of that I absolutely love, and I listen to everything that comes from them. One of them was from the local, which was Bloody Diamonds, which we absolutely love. Love you, Sarah and Jake. And then not local, but Canadian, was Kill Matilda, which, again, we absolutely love. Mm-hmm. And we have seen in multiple cities. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's all sorts of great indie art out there. Same with, like, physical artists, you know, traditional artists and podcasters, movie makers.
Whether you're into like sculpting, painting, podcasts, artists, yes, movie makers, etc., there is stuff out there done at the local scene and the national scene that doesn't make it to the AAA titles, that doesn't make it to EA, it doesn't make it to Fox Studios, but is still good, and it's up to you to find it with a little bit of detective work. And I challenge all of you to scrape a little bit, and you will be amazed at the stuff that's out there, because it's awesome.
You know, it's funny that you brought this up, because I actually had a brush with this very topic yesterday, because I'm looking to increase my number of conventions back to what it was before, because I was going to about 5 or 6 a year. And I looked at one, and I'm looking for ones local or in the area that I can drive to. And one of the ones that I can drive to had a press thing. So I checked to see what the guidelines were for their press. And they have these just very bland and blasé requirements for print media and local news. But when it comes to internet media and podcasts, they have a just ridiculous cadre of rules and things that they want to have to qualify. One of them, which boggled my mind, was 30,000 unique followers on one of your social medias. So it couldn't be like all of your social media things combined, but one. I'm like, first off, if you get 30,000 followers on your thing,
you're a guest, not press.
Yeah, you are officially not press. You are not an independent.
I can understand them having stricter regulations, because anybody can say they're a podcaster and anybody can say that they're a blog site and just get credentials, and people do that, and it's a way of cheating the con. By the way, don't do that. That's not cool. But yeah, that's not exact. I would have it more along the lines of, you must conduct these many interviews and have these many episodes produced, or something of that nature.
They have that too. Yeah. You have to have a consistent production of at least one episode a week.
Yeah.
And what killed me about that, though, is I know podcasts that I listen to that only come out once a month.
Yeah. Well, hello. Twice a month.
Yeah. Whoa. Your big daddies are here.
Yes, I know. It is twice a month, but that's where I started.
Thank you, big daddies.
Thank you, big daddies. But yeah, no.
Double thank you to the biggest Big Daddy.
I can actually understand that because most podcasts are once a week. But I meant in the regards of if you're going to get a press pass, we need to be in your feed. I don't want you just coming.
And you know, and it's crazy because I was sitting there thinking. I was like, what podcasts have that much attention? And it's the Joe Rogans. It's the
they're like 30,000 is a drop in the bucket to them. Yeah, but yeah, they're
Nerdist.
But like, like the people who do podcasts, like
your local podcasts are not going to have 30,000 followers. You're like, not going to have that.
They could probably get their entire town to subscribe, and it might be 30,000. Like, I know for a fact. Like, if I got everybody in the town that I live in to subscribe, it would not be 30,000.
You don't have 30,000 people living in your town.
Yeah. You know, and it just boggles my mind, and I get it.
But even then, the difference between a lot of these small-time podcasters and the next tier up has nothing to do with content or quality.
Nope.
That a lot of these bigger podcasters that I've listened to their show, it's not better produced. It has no better content. It's not like it's the star power or anything. It's advertising. It's the fact that they work for a podcasting studio, and they have paid the cash money to get their name and their product out there.
Or their name is already known, like Joe Rogan or Kevin Smith. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with these people, but when you have a name that's already out there, it becomes part of your brand. And there's also a difference, like, I'm in a lot of podcasting groups, and there's a lot of podcasters who their podcast is basically the advertising end of their business. Or their podcast is a way to get them to something else. It's to get them a publishing deal, to get them hired as a speaker, to get them all of these different things. And sometimes you feel like, am I the only person that podcasts? Because I really like doing it and I love listening to podcasts like mine. And well, obviously I'm not, because the other podcasts I listen to are generally indie podcasters who like making content like this. But yeah, there's so many more podcasts out there that are just not what we do, and that's fine. They're good and all that. But
to me, this is internet radio.
Yeah.
And if you're treating it like something other than internet radio, well, what little attention span I have for podcasts, you've lost.
Yeah.
No, it's funny you say internet radio, because it's 2019 and I still have people asking what's a podcast.
Oh, all the time. Yep. That's why I use the term internet radio.
And I tell them it's episodic internet radio.
Yeah. I always tell people it's like internet radio, but it's on demand.
It's episodic radio. Thanks for saying it classier than me, Nutty. Thanks. Shame my vocabulary.
No, episodic's pretty classy.
Using them fancy words.
I just don't trust that all the people I'm talking to know what episodic means.
College boy.
You know, and also, like, when you look at this type of thing, a lot of the times people think when you say the word indie, you mean bad.
Well, it goes with the idea of, oh, if it's a free game, it's not good, right? So if I don't have to pay for this podcast, is it any good?
Yeah, and also when you say, like, if you say something like low budget, they instantly think bad as well.
Yeah.
And this is a shameless plug for myself. I've got an interview with an independent film director by the name of Steven Tramatana coming out. And we talk about his films. And one of them was called Killer Pinata. We did it.
I was just going to say, is this the pinata one?
It is. And we did it for last year's Horror Fest. And he had a budget of like $1,800 to do that movie.
Wow.
It was shot in 8 days. And it's on Amazon Prime. And
Nerdy to Me has become their biggest fans.
And if you watch that movie, you're like, really? A sentient pinata seeking revenge for other pinatas?
That's cool.
By the way, just listen to that. That's exactly what the Horror Fest and Talk Nerdy to Me on, what is it, Nerds on Cinema, that's what you're going to get, and it's fantastic.
But the thing about it is, if you ignore that fact and look at what they do on a budget of $1,800 and a dollar store bought pinata, it's amazing. And that we on the episode we talk about his adaptation of a Stephen King story called Very Tight Places. And Jay Langegins, who is also on the episode with us, points out the fact that this is one of Stephen King's dollar stories. Stephen King has a thing where you, if you're an independent film director or a film student, you can pay him literally $1 cash money that you mail to Stephen King. Like literally a dollar in an envelope and mail to Stephen King, and you get the rights for 1 year to one of his stories to make your movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow. Well,
go Stephen.
Talks about it on that, but
well, he doesn't need any more money.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like he's framing them all. Like I feel like he's got a wall of them
of like dollars,
of dollar bills.
Yeah,
yeah, the dollar bills in his basement. Like, but you know, yeah, Killer Piñata was a low budget film, but it was a actually quite cogent and well put together film, even though it was about a sentient piñata.
I think it's awesome. So yeah, so indie art, absolutely. Jen or Raven, do either of you have mediums you'd like to discuss?
I'm looking at you, Raven. I keep putting pressure on you.
Just look.
Because I see the greatness in you. It's like.
That's okay. If she doesn't have something, she doesn't have to talk. I'll just edit this part out. It's all good. All right, Jax, is there any medium that you'd like to address? You're going in and out. I'm not sure why.
I don't know why either.
But what you were saying was webcomics, and that feeds right back into the indie artist. And yeah, I will agree with you 100% there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great webcomics. Some of them have become bigger names and have started doing like comic books that you'll find in stores. Like I'm going to come up with Kate Leff, a friend of the show. You know, she was doing her own indie comics, and then she started doing like Adventure Time and a whole bunch of other comics out there.
Webcomics hits it's two things too, because it's not only indie art, but it's also the freemium thing.
Yes, where absolutely.
A lot of them are out there on Patreon now.
Yep.
And a lot of
Pet Foolery is a fantastic new one. Pixie and Brutus.
Oh, Pixie and Brutus is awesome.
Yeah.
But not SKCD, Terminal Lance.
Yeah.
Questionable content. Oxman.
Yeah, questionable forever. Content has been going on forever.
Least I could do.
And least I could do is also looking for group, which is again friend of the show, Lars D'Souza, and Adam Sommer. If I could fart on cue right now,
nah, that was such a great interview.
So
it's as we were interviewing. So yeah. Nutty is interviewing Lars D'Souza. He's there, resplendent in his fez, in the lobby, in the hallway of this hotel.
Multicolored beard and all,
and Jewel State.
Mm-mm-mm.
No.
Mm? The man himself.
No,
it's the Colt 45.
No, it was Jewel State walked by first.
Yes.
And then Lando Calrissian walked by.
You mean the smoothest man ever to be born upon this planet?
Absolutely.
Mr. Billy D. Williams.
Like, he had a smoking jacket and a cane, and that was just his chilling out clothes, right, what he wore for his Q&A.
Jewel State walked
by. He literally has a cape closet at home, I'm sure.
Because we were in the hallway between the VIP suite where they were eating lunch.
The green room,
The green room. And then the hallway between the green room and the elevator.
Yeah.
So we're interviewing
across from the washrooms.
So we're at this little table, and we're Nutty's interviewing Lar. I'm back with the microphone on the other end of the hallway, and they walk by, and we just all of us stop talking. Everyone walks by, and Lar D'Souza just leans into his microphone and goes, "Man, if I could fart on cue, now would be the perfect time."
Yeah,
and not a second glance, not in anything, and here I am trying to like smirk into my hand and not into the microphone. And
yeah,
God, that was a good interview.
It was a lot of fun. But yeah, so webcomics, like they sell their merch. They have Patreons now. But yeah, they're new media. They're indie artists. They're all of these things. And they're freemiums. And with Pixie and Brutus, it's you get, he keeps putting out free comics, but for $1 a month, and he does not want you to give him any more than $1, you get 4 extra comics a month.
Oh, cool.
And some jerk out there is reposting them elsewhere on the internet.
Now, Pixie and Brutus, that's the German Shepherd and the little
kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The military, the retired military dog and the little kitten.
They're so good.
Dude, no, I love the one about the horror movies.
Oh my gosh, yes, that was great. I agree with you. These are some amazing stories, and like some of them, I mean, they span over a decade. I know questionable content. Oh yeah, control alt delete.
Control alt delete. With the choo choo bear. The cat with no bones.
I don't think it is currently in its current form, but in its start,
something positive.
Something positive. Absolutely.
What is it? Something positive, but also, what's the other one? There was like a bunch of voice actors got together. They're about to make an animated one.
Critical Role?
Oh, Critical Role.
Yeah.
Oh, like when not a webcomic, but a role-playing group. No, yeah.
But I mean, from the indie side of things, like it was just a bunch of friends getting together, and it just so happened that these friends were talented people who could make funny voices, and they played D&D.
Yeah. And if you want to see here, talented people that can make funny voices, can act really well, and craft great stories, and are just playing D&D, but aren't a huge success, you can listen to So Many Levels, which is Christiana Ellis's gaming podcast.
So good. Funniest woman in podcasting.
Well, she's an improv artist. She's a writer. She's an actor. She's got history and debate and speech. What do they call that?
And she's tall. Forensics. By the way, guys, she's super forensics. Tall. And she's a redhead, and she's awesome.
And she's got a great voice. And then you've got voice actor and artist and author Starla Hutchin. Then you've got voice actor and podcaster Viv. You've got voice actor and podcaster Jude Schubert. Then you've got the audio chocolate himself.
Viking.
Yes, and a Viking, too, which is also a Viking. But you've also got the audio chocolate himself, Mark the Caffeinated One Kilfoyle, who is a professional radio host.
That's because Mark can literally read you anything.
And he can do so many different voices. He is amazing.
Huh? And?
You can literally write a note on a piece of paper and give it to this man, and he can read it to you, and you would think Shakespeare wrote it because his vocal cords are dipped in the honey of the gods.
No, they are dipped in chocolate, audio chocolate. And what's even better, he's coming to my house in just a few short months.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
But
wait, I didn't finish. James and Jennifer Melzer. It's amazing, and so you can totally check that out. So I'm going to move on because I want to wrap this up to a medium that I am a big, big fan of, and I actually asked one of my group to start posting these because I've been sick and I kind of needed some pick-me-up, and I love selfies. And selfies get a bad name. There was even a song about it.
And let me take a selfie. Aww.
Exactly. And people think that it is narcissistic and they like to put people down for it. But what I love about selfies is the same reason everybody loves self-portraits. Like, you don't look at Van Gogh's self-portrait with the ear all bandaged up and go, oh, he's so narcissistic there. No, this is, we're looking at people viewing themselves. This is a whole art form. And now everybody can do it.
The selfie is an often maligned medium.
Mm-hmm.
It is viewed as narcissistic and selfish, but it all depends on what you're doing in the selfie. I mean, number one, if your arm is in the shot, just bend your elbow a little bit or get one of the stick things. If you're using it in a form that's creative and original, that's great. If you're using it as the digital equivalent of then you need to calm down a little bit. If you're doing it with the fish lips or all the other things,
I don't care.
I kind of do.
All right, old man, they're not fish lips. It's called
duck lips. Whatever.
And you know what? That has been replaced. That has been replaced by dog ears. Because now we have filters that can make ourselves look silly.
Yeah.
So people that are uncomfortable. Because my theory.
Remind me to tell you a story about dog ears later.
No. Tech and I had this theory that people would do duck lips because they didn't want to be seen as narcissistic, and they kind of felt self-conscious. So if I'm making a stupid face, then nobody can point out that I don't look good.
Right.
And that's where the dog ears and the kitty ears have come
in. You can do like the sexiest pose in like a sexy selfie. And then if you do the duck lips and take the photo, as soon as anybody says, well, you know, you're just doing it for narcissistic reasons, you can immediately flip back with, I was kidding. It was a joke. Look at my lips. I'm doing the duck lips. It was because I was being funny.
And now that's kitty cat ears and whiskers, right, and right, whatever, which I have no shame on anyone for doing. No. I'm not going to yuck your yum. If you're into the filters, go for it. By the way, they're really funny, especially when they move, when you move.
It's all about the
dragon one that breathes fire, which is dope.
That's awesome.
There's all kinds of reasons to do this, but it comes down to, excuse me, art as a whole.
Yeah.
And what are you really taking a picture of? What are you really doing? Are you doing this to show that, yep, I was really here, you know, like taking a picture with today's newspaper? Or is it...
Or, you know, you're taking a picture and there's this monument behind you.
Right. So the ones that I like, the type of selfie and thing that I like are the ones where they'll hold up a hand and it looks like they're holding up the sun. Or, you know, they've got one hand like this and it looks like they're holding up the Leaning Tower of Pizza. Where it looks like you're playing with perspective and you play with the medium, where you have fun with it, where you experiment, where you know, you be an artist. Or if it's just, let me take a selfie, then don't.
Well, no, do. And that's fine. It's up to you, whatever you want to do. Anyone else have thoughts on this?
I think an extension of this is something I do a lot. And that's...
Better not be dick pics.
No, but it is meat pics.
Well, to be fair, you are talking about me taking pictures of my meat. And I do a lot of that. And I think people, a lot of people don't appreciate the fact that there are chefs. There are...
You also take a lot of pictures of you smoking a cigar or about to get ready to cook your meat or headed to work.
Exactly. But the most important part about that is always my meat. My meat is always center of attention. It's the focus. It needs to be because it's my meat. But, you know, when it comes to food, when it becomes, you know, people forget that we don't necessarily eat with our mouths first. It's always with our senses. It's always with sight. It's always with smell. And the artistry that goes into plating something or making it look edible, I don't think it's enough.
Jason, do you get people telling you to stop posting food pics?
No, I have not, actually.
I get people telling me, they're like, oh man, you're always posting food pictures, but you make me hungry. Can you stop? I'm like, are you serious? No.
No, I have the opposite. I have people going, well, when are you going to bring it to work? I'm like, first off, I can't just smoke something and wait till the next day and bring it. I have to bring my smoker with me and smoke it while I'm at work. So when I go on lunch, it's freaking fresh.
I hear your smoker is portable.
So, I will send you a PM with my address, and I expect your smoker here in the next little while.
No, my rule is if you can get over, come on over. I'll cook for you. But
hey, Jax, I heard that Jason's brisket absolutely sucks, and it's the worst thing on the planet. And because I've never had it, and he's never brought it to my house, there's nothing to refute that fact.
I agree.
So, Jack, do you agree?
I suppose. Have to.
There we go. 100% of podcast listeners agree. Jason's brisket sucks because he won't feed me.
But back to selfies. Jen, Raven, Jax, you guys have anything to say on that?
Selfies don't bother me much. I mean, a lot of it is, hey, this is me today. And if you're feeling cute, you're going to take a selfie.
Yeah.
That's all it is. But the duck clips drive me crazy. You're not even gonna lie.
You're going to stop and let yourself take a selfie.
I love that the duck lips have gone away. I will agree on that. I was never a fan of them, but I don't want to harp on anyone that's done it. But I agree. I'm very happy that fad has gone away. But what Jen said there is, if you're cute, you're going to want to take a selfie, right? Yeah. And this is something that we didn't have before phones. We didn't have this access to, you know what? I'll look really cute. You might have a fleeting moment of seeing that in the mirror. But now we can capture it, we can share it, we can get likes and all these other things. And do we need the likes to make ourselves feel better? No, but you know what? It is a certain kind of validation. Mm-hmm. And it feels really good. And it's an easy way for people to compliment you without being creepy.
All art can now be instantly validated.
Yeah.
You used to be an independent filmmaker, and you used to have to struggle to find a local theater that would show your crummy movie on like a Thursday at 6 p.m. and no one would come. Now you can just upload the thing to YouTube, and you can get people to watch it around the world.
Vimeo if you're really serious about your craft.
Yes.
Yes, or Vimeo, or any of the other video platforms that I'm forgetting before I get...
What were you going to say, Jax?
That and Vimeo.
Oh.
And nothing else.
They both will actually do. They will actually do so much Vimeo, that they spoke over each other.
I still think Dailymotion is a thief. Like, I don't
it
know
is.
How
it's 100% a thief. Thank you, Dailymotion. Otherwise, I couldn't see Supernatural.
I'm watching.
Otherwise,
all
I couldn't
Red
watch Letterkenny.
Dailymotion. Just saying, I'm watching all of Red Dwarf on Dailymotion. Thank you, David.
Oh, it's on iTunes, by the way. If you want to pay for it, yeah, you can buy it on the American iTunes Store. That's where I buy every season because I really like Red Dwarf, so I pay for it. But yeah, no, I mean, I love the fact that art is put into people's hands. We can put it up. We can be those indie artists. We can share. We can go out there. But I also, there's something that I absolutely love about the selfie medium. So I am saying to all of my listeners, send me your selfies of your face, please. Send me your selfies. I want to see those faces. I want to see those smiling faces. If you're not comfortable, that's fine. But I will always love your selfies. So when I'm on Instagram and I'm scrolling through, I'm still only a few months into Instagram, so I'm still figuring things out. I will always like when I see a selfie. I will always like when I see a kitty or a puppy or something furry that is cute. I will always like if I see that you've cooked something yourself and if you have made art. So if you do any of those things on Instagram, let me follow you and you're going to get a lot of likes. And on that note, Jax, is there anything you'd like to promote? I know you don't have anything going on yourself right now, but is there any pet project thing that you're really in love with right now that you'd like people to pay attention to?
Well, since we brought up the idea of independent media, I have two actually to bring up. One is a brother of mine who's from my in Pennsylvania, his band Delmont. You can find them by finding them on Facebook, Delmont, and I think they're Instagram. They're currently trying to basically be the headliner for local Philadelphia band for the Philadelphia band's 12th anniversary. Delmont, D-E-L-M-O-N-T. I think their Instagram is either going to be Delmont or Delmont Band. They're probably linked together. And the other one is my friend from high school who is an actor in Chicago, working on a producer. The trailer for their first independent TV series, The Right Swipe, their trailer just dropped. It is on their social media, The Right Swipe. Easy to find them on Facebook, and they're there. You can check out their trailer, all of that. Definitely expand their reach.
Awesome. I'm going to go to Raven. Is there anything that you would like to plug or promote, either having to do with you or something that you're interested in?
No, not a thing. Everything I work on right now is basically under the cover of night, so I've got nothing to show.
Raven is working on secret stuff. Would you like people to follow you on Twitter or anywhere?
Yes, everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, Raven Ivory.
There you go. And Jen and Jason, where can people find you on the internet?
Sure, you don't want to do this.
No, I'm good.
Why do you ask?
Right?
It's not our job.
One day she'll say yes.
No, she won't.
Exactly. She's going to be like, yeah, I'll do it. I'm like, oh, and just fall over. And then she's going to be like, we need the ambulance. No, do it first. Do it first. Exactly. So on that note, you can always find us on our website at talknerdytomepodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdytome. And of course, you can find us on Twitter at nerdytomepodcast. You can also find me on Nostalgia Pilots, IdgetCast, Nutty Bites, and some secret things I've got working in the mix.
All right. Tech, is there anything you wanted to plug?
No, you're going to put it in the outro.
Yeah, we're all good.
Fuck.
Pre-recorded, baby.
You're so humble. You're so humble, Mr. Flying Akimi. You're so humble.
You mean Mr. Nidon?
I noticed you, senpai.
Sensei.
I love how he smiles at that.
By the way, you're looking at two senseis now.
Oh, no. The girls notice senpai. Oh, they notice senpai.
especially one. Yes, because now I am Shodan also. All right. So thank you very much, everyone. This has been a blast. And why don't you write in? Let us know, what mediums do you think don't get enough attention? And what do you think that we missed? Like, for instance, we didn't even talk about acrylics versus oils. Which, by the way...
Send your illicit selfies to tech.
Oh, no.
Just please don't.
No dick pic. Please no dick pics.
All of them to tech. Please send all of them.
I realized as soon as I said, send me your selfies, I'm like, oh gosh, that sounds like I'm asking for dick pics. But no, we're still on air, by the way.
Send all your selfies to tech. I need his inundated with illicit selfies.
So I will say, by the way, acrylics, when you're thinking of lasting, it's like, no, acrylics suck and oils are what you want to be famous and classic paintings are done in acrylics. But if you talk to most artists today, there are more acrylic painters out there than oils, and trying to get somebody to paint in oils is like pulling teeth. And I'm so excited that one of my favorite YouTube artists has started using oils.
Like Bob Ross.
No. Well, okay. I don't think of him as a YouTube artist so much as all of his stuff is on YouTube, which is fantastic. No, Bailey J.
Little trees today.
Yes. Bailey J just started painting in oil, real oils, which is fantastic. And that's so exciting.
Say, who was that again?
Bailey J. Not the Bailey J you're thinking of. If you're thinking of a different Bailey J, it's spelled differently. B-A-Y-L-E-E-J-A-E. Anyway, I had other notes. I was like, oh, maybe I should talk about how nobody paints in watercolor but me these days. But yeah, no, we kind of stuck to media.
Hold on, I will not let this slide.
Technically, tattoo artists are doing watercolors.
And I will not let this slide that she is over here smiling at me and not letting it be known. Raven also paints in watercolor.
Snap. That's awesome.
Slick.
I will also say that tattoo artists don't get enough recognition because they're seen as like not real artists, but I disagree. So I will go there also. And I just want to thank the patrons that make it possible for Nutty Bites to come out twice in a month. And I also want to make sure that you are listening to Specfic Media Presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast. The last season of Game of Thrones is out. So go to specficmedia.com and check out this year's offerings. We're actually putting out 2 episodes a week, but don't worry, it's like not too much. We're putting out a teaser, which has the show members who, you know, can record just a couple quick takes, and we get that out to you in the first couple days after the episode is released. And then later on in the week, we record a full in-depth episode for you. So go check that out by going to specficmedia.com. But also thank you so much to all of the patrons who have been making it possible that you've got 2 episodes a month. And, you know, I can't thank you enough. It's because of all of you that I remember that people actually want to hear these crazy ramblings of ours. So thank you very much to the top big daddy, Jax, to the second big daddy, Jason. Thank you to Andy, Luke. Thank you to Susanna. Thank you to Shane Poole of the Red Dwarf Introcast. Thank you to Will of a whole bunch of other podcasts. Thank you to Zach Mann. Thank you to Greg Larson. Thank you to the Radical Geek. Thank you to Stephen Pritchard. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to Lynette McFadden of Binet USA. Thank you to Melissa A. Bartel, the Bathtub Mermaid. Thank you to Harold. Thank you to Ian. Thank you to Rich the TT. Thank you to Patrick Scafito. Thank you to Ken Kennedy. Thank you to Kinsey. Thank you to Mike of the Redacted Files. Thank you to photographer Justine. And I think that's everybody. Oh, and thank you to Dagny, who is a patron through PayPal. So there are many ways that you can donate to the show. You can donate by going to Patreon and setting up a monthly donation. You can go to PayPal and, you know, give a one-time donation. And if it's $12 or more, I will record your name for the entire year. Basically, I'll record it for as long as you have a dollar going in. You can also set up monthly through PayPal as well. There is also an Amazon wish list that you can check out, all sorts of fun things. But basically what this does is this helps me pay for the server fees and the hosting and all of that so that I'm not putting too much money out for this podcast. So thank you very much. And we'll talk to you in the next episode. Bye.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.